Bonnie Bakley wanted to be a celebrity.
She thought, if I make it, maybe they'll love me.
This is a land of fantasy. This is a place of illusion.
It was her Hollywood dream, a fairy tale of love and deception.
She was really mad. She says, I think I've just been duped.
Two famous names play leading roles. Television tough guy Robert Blake.
He had guns in virtually every room of his house.
And the son of Hollywood legend Marlon Brando.
The bottom line was he drank. And he drank.
The underbelly of Hollywood is filled with screwed up people.
Did one of the men she loved murder her in cold blood?
The circumstances were so strange.
The concept that she was some evil monster that deserved to be killed was all part of the ploy.
This is the heart of darkness.
In depth, insightful, in a class of its own. It's America's leading journal, Vanity Fair. Writer Peter Manso searches for the truth behind an inconvenient murder. It's May 4th, 2001. In Studio City, just over the hill from Hollywood. Celebrity newlyweds Robert Blake and Bonnie Lee Bakley are headed out to his favorite restaurant.
So it's Friday night, and they go to Vitello's. Robert Blake parked this car behind a dumpster next to a house that was under construction site and vacant. It was pitch black.
He was carrying a gun because he feared for his safety.
After all, Blake is a screen legend, famed for his tough guy roles on Both Sides of the Law, the Emmy-winning detective from the TV series Beretta, and the remorseless killer from the movie In Cold Blood.
Look at me, boy. Take a good look. Because I'm the last living thing you're ever going to see.
After a relaxed meal, the couple leaves around 9:30 p.m.
They walk back to the car. Robert Blake starts the engine, and he rolls down Bonnie's window.
He said, "Oh, honey, I've left my gun in the restaurant. Let me run back and get it."
When Blake returns from the restaurant, some 17 minutes later, he discovers a gruesome scene.
Bonnie Bakley was motionless and had been shot to death. There was blood everywhere. He was horrified, absolutely horrified. He ran to the neighbors, knocked on their door, screaming and yelling.
Yes, hi. There's a gentleman by the name of Mr. Blake who's got his wife in the car right now.
Do you need a paramedic?
We need an ambulance right now.
But it's too late. Bonnie is pronounced dead, the victim of two gunshots, one a fatal shot to the head at close range. The murder weapon is found in a nearby dumpster.
The circumstances of Bonnie Bakley's murder were so strange, it immediately kicked off a major investigation.
There's a Hollywood murder mystery tonight, and it's not a movie. Who shot and killed the wife of actor Robert Blake?
Detectives from the LA Police Robbery Homicide Division begin the investigation. They quickly learn that Bonnie Lee Bakley lived a complicated life and has made some enemies.
Bonnie was a piece of work. It didn't take me very long to see that she was at least as interesting, if not 10 times more so, than Blake ever was.
born in June 1956. Growing up in a tiny rural New Jersey town, Bonnie endures a difficult childhood.
She was this kind of typical hard luck story, a young girl who was raised by troubled parents.
My mother and father were very young when they got married, and I think they were still sowing some oats. My father was an alcoholic, and the stress of living with an alcoholic is hard.
Bonnie and her sister were on and off welfare in their early years. They were abused, had trouble in school.
The kids would make fun of her all the time, and she didn't have the up-to-par clothes.
I was just a kid that everybody hated in school. So then you grow up saying, oh, I'll fix them, I'll show them, I'll be a movie star.
Her goal was to get out of there. She really wanted to be an actress or a singer so bad. Not having the attention from my mother and father really bothered her deeply. She thought, if I was pretty enough, if I make it, maybe they'll love me.
She was convinced way the heck back in the 60s that she was going to be a big star as Brenda Lee or Connie Francis. She was just a fireball of ambition.
She made a 45, but it was the funniest thing because she couldn't sing for anything.
So I'll just chase my genetic routine, and hopes one day he may notice me. God only knows what it means to me. This is the end of my story.
But what Bonnie lacks in musical talent, she makes up for with her looks and confidence. She drops out of high school and gets a certificate from the Barbizon School of Modeling. For Bonnie, it's easy money.
At the time, she started hanging out at the swimming pool of a local nudist colony.
I believe that's where she got her start. Nude modeling. The nude modeling came into play, and there, I guess she found her niche and the way to make money. She took her own pictures and started selling them out of the back of dirty magazines.
She was ahead of her time. She turned it into a kitchen table cottage industry.
Back then, there wasn't a very easy way to access porn. So mail order was a big time business.
By the time she's in her mid-20s, Bonnie's mail order business, United Singles Incorporated, is thriving. She moves her headquarters to Memphis, and Bonnie takes her work to the next level. She begins offering her clients a more personal service.
This next thing, would you like my phone number? You can have my phone number. For $35, I will talk to you.
Bonnie understood that there are a lot of lonely men out there. She knew what men wanted, and she was ready, willing, and able to give it to them and make money off of it.
Bonnie Lee Bakley, now a successful entrepreneur, may have spent most of her adult years selling men a fantasy, but she's living under the spell of another fantasy, the Hollywood dream. She starts to make frequent trips to Los Angeles around 1995.
Bonnie Bakley wanted to be a celebrity, and if she couldn't become one herself, she wanted to marry one. She was a woman on a mission.
From an early age, she assumed that her ticket out of Palookaville was fame. She did have that little black book. Bonnie was out there looking after celebs. She was kind of like a forerunner of the Kardashians. And if you couldn't do it in your own right, then you became famous by attaching yourself to others.
She wanted everybody who hated her growing up for having stringy hair or not being perfect or not having the right clothes. She wanted to show them, look, I am beautiful and I made it, and look at the husband I have on my arm.
One warm summer night in 1998, Bonnie meets Robert Blake at a jazz club in Burbank. He's 64. She's 42.
She didn't even know who he was, but she felt that whole connection.
They were hot and heavy almost instantly.
I think she was looking for the fantasy guy that's going to hold her, love her, and take care of her.
Robert Blake is divorced and alone. Some say he sees something in Bonnie he recognizes. Both are working-class New Jersey kids. Both have experienced the dark side of life.
Robert Blake was a tortured soul. His father was a no-talent drunk. And the secret of Robert Blake's birth, his mother carried on a relationship with his uncle, and that was actually his father.
He was somebody she could have sympathy for and empathy with. You know, just a painful background to bond with, I guess.
By the spring of 1999, their relationship is well established. Blake is fascinated by Bonnie's roguish business, her money, and her looks.
He was inviting her over whenever he got horny, to put it bluntly. And I think that she recognized this, but she also thought that it could move on to something bigger and better, i.e. marriage.
She was looking for the fairy tale, and she just thought they were meant to be.
He often takes her to Mata Hari, the eccentric compound where he lives in Studio City.
He was ripe for a younger woman like Bonnie, who would make him feel like he was a celebrity one more time.
This is a land of fantasy. This is a place of get-rich craziness. This is a place of illusion. The underbelly of Hollywood is filled with screwed-up people. It's the turf. It's just the lay of the land out there.
The Hollywood dream is built on make-believe and no small measure of deception. And there's one thing Bonnie has not told Robert Blake.
At the same time that she was courting Blake, she was also seeing Christian Brando, Marlon's son.
What happens next makes investigators wonder, could one of the men in Bonnie Lee Begley's life have executed her in cold blood? Almost 2 years before Bonnie Lee Begley hooks up with actor Robert Blake, she's on the hunt for a celebrity spouse. And the son of a Hollywood legend gets her attention when she sees his picture in a magazine at what some would call the lowest point in his life.
Bonnie throws me the magazine, and I said, this Christian is pretty hot. He was in the centerfold, coming out of the courtroom in handcuffs. And I'm like, what a shame, what a waste. Look how cute this poor guy is.
Christian Brando is the first child of one of Hollywood's most celebrated actors, the star of The Godfather and Streetcar Named Desire.
Who do you think you are, a pair of queens? I just remember what Huey Long said, that every man's a king, and I'm the king around here. And don't you forget it.
Marlon Brando is simply the very best American actor. It's a figure of danger, unpredictability, and of course, sexuality. It's a mistake to say Marlon was famous merely as an actor. Marlon Brando was among the top 10 most recognized names on the surface of this God's green earth.
Brando is a superstar, but he's not much of a father.
There were conflicts between Marlon Brando and Christian's mother. They fought over Christian for years.
They're at war. They want each other dead. I mean, this is one of the worst Hollywood divorces in history, and that's to say a great deal.
Christian, like Bonnie, some would say, ends up damaged by his childhood.
What is it like to be the son of the sexiest actor around? One can never measure up.
The bottom line was he drank, and he drank.
He was hanging out with bad guys, druggies, boozers, bikers, the underside of Hollywood. We're not talking about an adjusted human being here.
Christian was at war with the world.
And he's about to explode. One spring night, Christian takes his half-sister, Cheyenne, to dinner at a famed Hollywood watering hole.
Russo and Frank's, the oldest restaurant in Hollywood. Humphrey Bogart had a booth there. Christian has three Negronis. Now, Negronis, they're delicious, but they pack a wallop.
When they tested his blood later, his blood alcohol was a 0.19. The legal limit now is 0.08.
Soon, the conversation about Cheyenne's boyfriend, Dag Drolet, turns serious. She's pregnant with his child.
Cheyenne spoke to Christian about Dag Drolet slapping her around.
Christian was agitated. He liked his half-sister. He told Cheyenne that he was going to, quote, bust on Dag Drolet.
Christian picks up his 45-millimeter automatic at a girlfriend's apartment, then heads up into the Hollywood Hills, following Mulholland Drive to Marlon Brando's house.
They arrive back at the house, Cheyenne and Christian, and Christian marches into the TV room where Dag Drolet, in surfer trunks, is alone watching TV, and within probably 30 seconds, puts a 45 caliber bullet through his left cheek. Christian walked in, said something to Drolet, and blew him away.
Rushing into the room, Marlon Brando calls 911 and attempts to save Drolet.
Marlon tried some type of mouth-to-mouth, but that was not possible. It's a fatal shot. Dag Drolet died immediately.
Christian tries to pass off. It was an accident. He said, I told him to stop hitting my sister. We got in a fist fight. We started grappling, and the gun went off.
The district attorney charges Christian Brando with first-degree murder, premeditated killing. They don't buy Brando's claim that there was a struggle.
Doesn't fit with the evidence, doesn't fit with the physical facts that you look at.
The crime scene photographs show Drolet in this kind of a position. In this hand, he's holding the TV clicker. In this hand, he's holding a Bic lighter and rolling papers and a pouch of tobacco.
If there's a struggle, you're not going to see cigarette paper and a lighter in your hands. There's no sign of any type of fight. I thought Christian came in, pissed off, drunk, shot him in the face. Just that simple.
But proving murder is much harder without the only eyewitness, Marlon Brando's daughter, Cheyenne.
It was assumed that you put her on the stand and you get her to tell what happened. Marlon did everything in his power and succeeded in whisking Cheyenne out of the country.
I spent literally months trying to get her back. They would not agree to coming back.
Without an eyewitness, the first-degree murder charges won't stick. Christian Brando pleads guilty to manslaughter. In the sentencing hearing, Marlon Brando takes the stand to plead for his son, describing his own failure as the father of a boy caught up in a bitter custody battle.
Marlon was riven with guilt.
Christian, he was just a basket case of emotional disorders.
Marlon cried. He broke down on the stand.
I saw Dag lying there. And I tried to get all of myself.
He begged for forgiveness from the family. Barshop, the DA who prosecuted Christian, who's seated right in front of me, turns around and says, is he acting? And I said to him, I don't know.
The judge sentences the younger Brando to 10 years for manslaughter with a gun.
Christian is a tragedy, and he wrought tragedies on other people, which may be the biggest tragedy of all.
Sitting in San Luis Obispo prison, Christian Brando starts corresponding with a new pen pal who reaches out to him. Bonnie Lee Bakley sees Christian's photo in a magazine and is determined to connect with him.
She thought that Christian Brando was interesting because he was the son of a celebrity.
She just FedExed him a letter with some pictures. And that was it.
Christian is released in 1996 and moves to Washington State, where he works as a tree cutter and artistic welder. Bonnie travels to visit him and continues to see him even after she begins dating Robert Blake.
Bonnie had a choice to make between Brando and Blake as to who she wanted to be with.
I remember telling her to stay with Christian. I know he's a murderer, but he's a really nice guy.
She was in this great position because for the first time, she had not just one celeb, but two.
Then, in June 2000, something happens that will, at long last, make Bonnie's Hollywood dream come true. But her Hollywood dream quickly turns into a nightmare. June 2nd, 2000. Bonnie Lee Bakley gives birth to a beautiful baby girl.
When the baby was born, she was unsure who the father was.
6 months before, when she told Hollywood legend Robert Blake that she was pregnant, he was not pleased. She had told him she was on birth control.
You swore to me, you promised me. That was all a lie. That's not a little lie, that's a big lie.
Blake's strategy was to offer $250,000 to go away. And she said no. She wanted to get married and raise the baby.
She adored her. That was her little golden child, and she was so proud of her.
When Robert Blake rejects Bonnie and the baby, Bonnie turns to the other man in her life who could possibly be the child's father.
She bounced over to Christian Brando and said, "It's yours." Christian had a completely different reception from Blake. He thought that was peachy keen, that he was going to be a father.
She names the baby Christian Shannon Brando.
He couldn't wait to get his arms around the baby and have a life together. He loved her and he couldn't wait to see her.
Still, Bonnie pines for Robert Blake.
The problem with Christian was he wasn't actually a star. Blake was the famous one. He was her dream, the dream she worked so hard to attain.
Bonnie doesn't tell Christian about Blake, or that she believes he's probably the father of her baby. But she does something that changes everything.
She sent Blake a picture of the baby.
He looked at the picture and he saw himself.
DNA tests confirm that Robert Blake is the baby's father.
She changed the baby's name to Rose Lenore Sophia Blake.
3 months after the baby is born, Bonnie takes her to Los Angeles to meet him. Blake is thrilled to see her.
Robert Blake took Bonnie to his house, and he said to Bonnie, "Let's go have lunch, and there's a nurse, you can take care of Rosie."
He says, "It's okay, you can leave the baby with Nurse Betty. She'll take care of the baby. Come on, honey, let's go to lunch."
Soon after they are seated at a nearby cafe, two men in uniform approach their table.
LAPD officers flashed badges at her and said, "You're on probation in Arkansas. You need to come with us." You're getting on the next plane out of here.
4 years earlier, Bonnie was arrested in West Memphis, Arkansas for identity fraud and is still on probation.
She was pulled over, and when they asked her for her ID, officers discovered that she had a dozen different driver's licenses and credit cards.
Bonnie had been using different names and mailboxes around the country to send out her risque photos, and she needed an ID for each one.
Her business called for being many different people.
So when the mail comes and the checks come and the money orders come, you have to have ID in those names.
Probation requires that she not leave Arkansas. Now, crossing state lines could mean trouble. Bonnie is frantic, but Blake assures her he'll sort everything out.
She had to leave the child. But it's okay, he said. Nurse Betty was going to get on the next plane with the baby and deliver her to Arkansas.
When Bonnie lands, she calls her sister.
She was really mad. She was upset. She says, I think I've just been duped.
In fact, she was.
Blake hired an ex-detective to pretend to be an officer arresting Bonnie for a probation violation.
Her real probation officer didn't know she had left the state.
I believe it was a complete sham. Blake conned Bonnie, got the baby away from her.
I believe from the bottom of my heart that Mr. Blake did everything he could to try and create a nice home for a beautiful little child.
For Blake, that home is with his first daughter, Delina, a divorce psychologist.
He wanted the baby to give to his daughter, who was not married and childless and really had a love for children. When he stole the baby, she was livid. She got permission from her probation officer and flew back out.
She went directly to LAPD and filed kidnapping charges against him.
Bonnie laid down an ultimatum. We're either going to have the baby back and become a family, or else she's going to go public and smear his name all over the press.
The way they worked it out was if she would drop the charges, he would go ahead and marry her and they would give it a try as a family.
Finally, Bonnie calls Christian Brando to tell him the news.
I remember talking to Christian, and it was so sad because he still was expecting to see her and the baby.
By October 2000, Bonnie has signed a prenuptial agreement. She doesn't want Blake's money. She has a $500,000 of her own.
Bonnie thinks that it's going to be the greatest wedding since Princess Diana, and wants to send out invitations. And Blake says, nothing doing.
He's so cheap, he wouldn't buy anything, not even the wedding bands.
She has to go out and buy her own ring. This fantasy life that she concocted way the heck back when she was a teenager, it's not coming together the way that she dreamed that it would.
On a chilly autumn Sunday, the couple gets married in Robert Blake's backyard.
Bonnie is under the impression that she's finally landed this guy. Obviously, she's got an uphill battle, but she thinks that she'll eventually be able to win him over. She's gonna bring him around.
But soon, Bonnie realizes she may have made a serious mistake.
Blake wasn't gonna let Bonnie live in the main house with him, and she didn't know that till she got there.
She was very baffled and uncomfortable, to say the least.
He had guns in virtually every room of his house.
He started getting, you know, a little nastier and a little bitter, and even the sex was getting rough, and she didn't like that. But she would not leave that guy. And the more he pushed her away or was mean to her, the more she liked it. It must go back to the father rejection, that mother rejection.
Even worse, Bonnie hardly sees her 11-month-old child, who is still living with Robert Blake's daughter.
The baby, Rose, was with his daughter, Delina, about 2 hours away. She found it very bizarre.
She's been after him regularly to bring the baby home. Robert was hemming and hawing and finding excuses. Bonnie took it and took it and took it, and finally Bonnie told Blake that the baby needed to come home. If this didn't happen, that there would be hell to pay.
Finally, Bonnie tells her sister that Blake has agreed to bring baby Rose home on Monday, May 7th. The Friday night before, on a dark street near Vitello's restaurant, Bonnie Lee Bakley, sitting in the passenger seat of her husband's Dodge Stealth, is shot twice at close range. Nothing is taken. There are no eyewitnesses.
I couldn't believe it. There's no feelings you could describe. You can't wrap your head around it.
The circumstances of Bonnie Bakley's murder were so strange, it became a major cause celeb overnight.
Bonnie Lee Bakley's murder is more than just a mystery. It quickly becomes a national scandal.
The Hollywood community was shocked over the weekend as details emerged about the murder of the wife of actor Robert Blake.
Investigators question her husband, Robert Blake, about the night his wife was shot in cold blood.
From the very beginning, Blake maintained his innocence and said that some mysterious person or persons showed up out of the blue and killed her.
But who would want Bonnie Lee Bakley dead? Police search Robert and Bonnie's home, looking for clues.
Bonnie recorded all of her conversations. I don't know why, it was just an obsession. She just liked it.
One of those recordings is with Christian Brando.
Christian Brando was told by Bonnie Bakley that she was pregnant with his child.
You're lucky somebody ain't out there to pull a bullet in your head.
He found out that she had not told him the truth, that it was Robert Blake's child, and he was furious.
It was such a great target for the Blake lawyers to point the finger at.
We thought Christian Brando had a violent streak. He had shot his sister's boyfriend to death. He had pled guilty to manslaughter, potentially very violent, and very angry at her. And we took his threat as very serious.
Was Christian a serial killer? No. Was Christian a danger? He once frightened the out of me, yes.
But Brando has an alibi.
Christian Brando was in Washington State at the time. There was never any even possibility that he committed this crime.
Still, according to Robert Blake, Brando isn't the only suspect. He says there are hundreds of others, all of those men who fell for the ad she placed in the back of men's magazines.
I think someone from Bonnie Bakley's past, someone whose grandfather's heart was broken, had some very angry family members. And I think someone from one of those families murdered Bonnie Bakley.
The hunt for Bonnie's killer takes investigators to more than 20 states to find the men Bonnie Bakley did business with.
It was the biggest, most expensive investigation in LAPD history at the time.
Months pass. The police are unable to find any eyewitnesses or any forensic evidence linking a killer to the crime.
Such a complex investigation takes time. At this point, we have not identified a single person as the suspect responsible for the murder. We are continuing to follow all leads.
While the police investigation continues, Robert Blake and baby Rose move in with his daughter, Delina.
Mr. Blake loved this child, wanted to be the best father he could be to this beautiful little girl.
Finally, 11 months after the killing, an arrest.
Police arrested actor Robert Blake at an upscale home near Los Angeles Thursday for the murder of his wife.
Robert Blake, star of film and television, is charged with murder. His motive, according to police, he was trapped in a marriage that he wanted no part of. They believe Blake had crossed over from screen tough guy to real life killer.
Robert Blake was very, very passionate about his innocence from the time I met him.
He certainly had motive and means and opportunity.
It takes more than 2 years after his arrest before Robert Blake's trial begins.
The prosecution claimed that Mr. Blake premeditated and planned her murder, that he went back to the restaurant claiming that he left his gun there. That was a ruse. And that in the meantime, either Mr. Blake or someone on behalf of Mr. Blake killed Mrs. Begley.
Doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Why would you carry a gun with you to the restaurant? The whole scenario smells of bad fish.
The busboys had already bussed the table. They didn't see the gun there. No one saw him go back. The hostess didn't see him. The two people smoking didn't see him go in or out.
The murder weapon is also unusual. A vintage German army handgun.
The murder weapon was a World War II antique PK Walther, the sort of thing found in Graham Greene spy novels. It was found in a dumpster not all that far from the murder scene.
There was no proof whatsoever that Mr. Blake had ever owned or touched or fired this gun. He didn't have the blood spatter on his clothing consistent with him doing this. Forensically, everywhere you turn, he was exonerated.
But the district attorney is getting ready to drop a bombshell. He has two witnesses who will testify that they were offered money to murder Bonnie Lee Begley. The Robert Blake trial is commanding worldwide attention when the prosecution introduces two surprise witnesses.
In his earlier days, Blake hung out with stuntmen in Hollywood. A couple of them came forward to the police and told them that Blake had tried to solicit them to kill his wife.
He was running scenarios by them. Interesting enough, one of the scenarios was from one of his early Beretta shows about a famous man coming from an Italian restaurant and the wife gets gunned down.
The prosecution also has one key piece of evidence.
He had gotten a phone card that was supposedly untraceable.
There's 30 phone calls in the card. He was only calling the two stuntmen and never used it again after the killing.
But on the stand, defense attorneys discredit both witnesses on cross-examination.
The defense tore them apart on character grounds.
After a 3-month trial and 9 days of deliberations, the jury returns with its verdict. Not guilty.
When they read the verdict, I think I almost hit the floor.
It was devastating. They had a really strong case, and I felt the jury just got it horribly wrong. I was sitting in the court with Bonnie's family when they came back with a not guilty count. I whispered, "I promise you I'll prove he did this."
Bonnie's family hires Eric Dubin and his legal team to sue Robert Blake in civil court.
I knew in my heart he was guilty. He used to tell her, I'm Robert Blake. I'm gonna kill you and I'm gonna get away with it. I remember we were talking on the phone the day she died and she said, you know he's gonna do it. He's going to kill me.
Just because somebody has money and fame doesn't mean they have the right to go around offing people they don't like.
In the civil trial, Blake is found liable for the murder of Bonnie Lee Bakley. He is ordered to pay her estate $30 million.
And that verdict was so powerful on so many levels. It was an amazing vindication for the family.
When he was ordered to pay $30 million, he was aghast. And he ultimately declared bankruptcy.
In the end, Delina Blake adopts her baby half-sister, who is now 18.
I can only hope that her life has turned out to be better than that of either of her natural parents.
She's had a good life. I'm happy for her. To me, there's no sense in stirring that pot. I'm just very happy that Delina ended up taking such good care of her.
Today, at age 84, Robert Blake keeps a low profile. He recently remarried. As for Bonnie, she ended up where she might have dreamed, at Forest Lawn, the cemetery of celebrities.
That is delicious irony that her neighbors there are among the best known stars in Hollywood history. In Hollywood terms, it's a fairy tale gone awry. Imagine a Disney princess gone to seed who never got her Prince Charming, so she went out looking for him, and she wound up instead with the Prince of Darkness.